Welcome to CFO Radio, only one radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. We'd like to thank our sponsors. Lee Cantor, would you introduce our sponsors?
Absolutely. Today's show is brought to you by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, project-based consulting, and permanent placement. Visit our website, DelaneyLLC.com, and SAP Business by Design, an integrated on-demand solution that helps small to medium-sized businesses run their entire business. With no software or hardware to buy, install, maintain, or upgrade, you can focus on what is important, your business, not your software. Visit SAP.com for more information.
Today we are here with Alex Lawrence. He joins us today to discuss the role of the CFO, specifically as it relates to funding your business. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you, Lorraine. It's nice to be with you.
Well, Alex, you've served in some senior roles, and today you are a partner with Funding Universe. What I'd like to do to start off the show for our listeners is perhaps give us a little bit about your background, where you've come, and how you've arrived at this role you're in today.
Sure. I've been an entrepreneur for the better part of the last 17 years. I've started 9 different companies, 6 of which have had successful exits, 3 of which have failed. I have learned uniquely from all 9 experiences. I've had 2 fairly reasonable exits in a variety of industries, from consumer products, retail, and franchising, to most recently technology. I was the founder, owner, and CEO of a Twitter software management tool that Funding Universe acquired, and as part of that acquisition, was able to join as a partner here in our business. And I teach a class on entrepreneurship at the local university. I have a bachelor's degree and an MBA, and I'm passionate about helping entrepreneurs get funded, helping them improve their business model so they can get funded, and I have found a real nice home here with my partners at Funding Universe.
Well, that's very unique. And I had met you and Brooke Blake at the Inc. Event in Orlando earlier this year. An intro into Funding Universe. Alex, tell us, who and what are you? What do you do and how do you help your customers?
Sure. Funding Universe is the best in the world at matching qualified entrepreneurs with banks, investors, and other funding sources. And the reason we say that, a couple of examples. Number one, we are aware of just over $50 million in financing that we were able to successfully match entrepreneurs with in 2009. We know the number is much higher than that because there's some difficulty tracking all of it. In 2010, we looked to double that number in terms of successful financings. And in the first quarter of 2010, we were the number one source of SBA loans for the number one SBA loan provider in the USA. So we're definitely a leader, and that translates into roughly 10,000 businesses per month, new businesses per month from every state in the U.S. in every industry you can imagine that we help with a variety of things related to funding, their business plan, their pro forma financial model, their PowerPoint presentation, their website, their entity incorporation, all the things that are built around successfully getting them either a bank loan or an angel investor or a venture capitalist or some combination of those to help get them the financing that ultimately they seek. And even if they don't get financing, still we do a lot of things to help them improve their business model, improve their profitability, increase their sales, do things that will help them get funded but also help their businesses to perform better in the interim.
Very unique model. And Funding Universe, your website details some very key statistics about how only a very few number of companies are successful in raising capital. Give us an intro to this, Alex. Why is that?
Well, there's 2 different kinds of capital, really, that you can raise. There's equity capital and debt capital. And we think that we're a reflection of the overall market. About 90% of our customers qualify for debt financing, and about 10% of our customers qualify for equity financing. That doesn't mean that they'll necessarily all get it, but we're able to identify what path they should go down. And the reason being is, you know, I like to use the example of a flower shop. You may, for example, own two or three flower shops that do $2 million a year in annual revenue with $400,000 in EBITDA. That's a very good business, a business you should be proud of, a business that's a contributor to the economy, both in jobs and taxes and everything else. But it's not going to interest an angel investor or venture capitalist because, you know, unless you're going to franchise that business or aggressively open a dozen new locations or some other thing, and even still, that'd be a difficult fit. You've got to exhibit the ability to scale that business rapidly. And by that I mean you have to show that you can get that business from $2 million to $50 million in sales in a 3, 4, 5 year period, that there's a strong exit, because ultimately these are investors. They're not looking for loans to be paid back. They're looking for returns and multiples on their investment. And so that automatically eliminates a lot of really good businesses that are quality businesses from an equity investment. And so that puts most of our clients, like I said, you know, of 10,000 plus a month, 9,000 or so, are best suited to follow a path to financing that leads to a debt option. And we have over a dozen different kinds of debt options with 450-plus banks all around the U.S. that underwrites all different kinds of deals, everything from small SBA loans to large equipment leases and factoring and everything in between. So it really is a function of the type of business you are. Now, as far as the success rate, it, as we all know, reading the papers and watching the news and reading on the Internet, certainly investors and banks have both tightened their criteria. And so the best advice that I can give is if you are an idea and you don't have any customers, any traction is the term that's most commonly used, it's going to be more difficult for you to get sizable funding. You can probably go to a bank if you've got good personal credit and some other things and get a small loan. You could also potentially interest some angel investors for early stage investment, depending on the strength of your management team and the track record of your management team and so forth. But it's much easier to fund your business with customers. Have your customers fund your business by writing you checks for your product or service. And as you get a little bit of traction, then banks become more interested, investors become more interested. For businesses that aren't ideas, that are more mature, either they've been around for a year or two or perhaps longer, then historical financials are incredibly important. Tax returns and the supporting financial documents, so that they can understand where the business has been, what its revenues and profits are, what kind of collateral is available for that business to put up if in the case, excuse me, of a loan. For an investor, that stuff is important, but a lot more of what they focus on is what is going to happen in the future.
So is your role in first part educating those that come to you that potentially would like to maybe raise capital, maybe have that equity sale? Is it an education regarding all the various avenues of how they can raise what I would describe as cash? Very often when companies come to Delaney to look at raising capital, I try and help them retune their wording to say raise cash, and then we start looking at other options. Is that the education that you give to your clients?
Oh, most definitely. I think one of the great mistakes that business owners make is, you know, if they think about getting a bank loan, they just go to their local bank where they already have an account, and they don't really know exactly what they're looking for in terms of an approval process, and they get declined, they get discouraged, or they go to some local investors, and they're not very well prepared on how to answer their questions and how to build a model that the investors are going to understand. So a big part of what our path to financing includes is once we've analyzed and underwritten their business to determine what path is best for them to pursue, either debt or equity or a combination of both, we have a very specific set of things that they need to do, either with our help or on their own, to make sure that they're in an ideal position to raise cash, as you'd say.
Sure. So you talked a little bit about the investors, the current economic climate, and the 90-10 rule that you've explained. Have you seen a change in the U.S. in the economic climate? Was that 90%, has that changed?
No, I think that is fairly unrelated to the economic environment. I will say this: there was a period of time, there were a lot of businesses that were very early stage that might not have received funding did get funding. So there were some ideas that were just ideas or very early stage that got sizable amounts of funding in the late 90s that, maybe changed that a little bit, maybe 85 to 15. But those days are gone, kind of those irrational investments, large ones in ideas, associated with kind of the dot-com boom and bust. But really, it's if you look at a picture of the businesses that are all around the U.S., you drive down the street and the businesses you see all around you in office buildings and strip malls and everywhere in between, I think it's still fair to say that probably 90% of the businesses that you look at and deal with as a customer and as a member of your community on a daily basis are more suited for debt than equity. But just because of those things I mentioned about, the market size, the exit opportunity, the, revenue, top-line revenue requirements and things like that, because they need all that stuff to make the kind of money on their investment that helps offset, the failure rate.
Sure.
Venture capitalists, most of them, have about a 90% of their investments fail, about 10% of their investments succeed, and so they have to have those 10% do very, very well to make up for the others that that don't work out.
Now, you also mentioned a little earlier in our discussion that the bank credit has tightened. In the same regard, those 10% of the population that are able to seek that equity investment backing, have the investors changed or tightened their procedure, due diligence, and the like?
Certainly, yes. I think they've gotten, I don't know if they've changed procedure perhaps, but a lot of them have narrowed their focus, so they don't invest in as broad a range of businesses. Many of them have decreased the number of deals they'll do per year, both because they don't have as much capital to invest and because they're trying to manage their risk level a little better. But the types of businesses that are getting funded, I mean, I say this all the time, good businesses are still getting funded. Good businesses are still getting debt and equity capital. That hasn't changed. And they're still getting it on good terms and good valuations and so forth. And so businesses that have strong management teams and good market opportunity and good exit opportunity, good historical financials, good collateral, good personal credit, all those kinds of things, depending on the type of financing they're going for, those deals are still getting done. What are not getting done are some of the mediocre deals that may or may not succeed, but are considered a little more questionable. And that's really where we add a lot of value, is helping those groups identify what it is they need to work on so that they can be in a better position to be upgraded, both in the eyes of the bank as well as the investor community.
That's very interesting, and obviously the program, the radio show, is about the role of the CFO. As we evolve into our discussion about that as it impacts funding, when we move out of the recession in the U.S., is valuation of the business more important, or is the bigger challenge the fundraising in order to grow the business?
Well, I think there's equal challenges. Valuation is always important on an equity raise. Valuation doesn't matter, obviously, on a debt raise. But on an equity raise, valuation is always important because it affects dilution of shareholders. And so the lower the valuation, the bigger chunk you give away for the investment that you receive. So that's always going to be important now and 50 years from now. Valuations haven't gotten, in our experience, terribly more aggressive. Like I said, good companies are still getting good valuations. And they're still getting funded. So,
are they getting the same level of funding? What kind of a ratio are you seeing? A 2 times, an 8 times, a 13 times? What are you seeing there?
Yeah, it's very deal specific and industry specific, and stage specific. So depending on the stage of the company and the industry that it's in, their multiple. Assuming that metric is used, it could be a multiple of revenue. It could be a multiple of EBITDA. It could be some combination of both and other, outside factors. If the company is growing really, really fast, sometimes those are are difficult to use standard multiples because the growth is reflecting a hockey stick type line, that those get significantly higher multiples. And so, but those deals are fairly rare. I mean, not everybody's a Google by any means, or some, you know, wild success story like that. And so valuations are still actually pretty fair. And companies, you know, VCs are still investing. What's happening is a lot of venture capital funds are having difficulty raising new money. And so in order for them to have capital to invest in deals, they have got to see some exits. And so the M&A activity is improving dramatically, even in the last 6 months. And that's good news, because as these VCs exit investments, they recoup cash, and that's what's going to fund future investments, because a lot of their LPs and others are not putting more money into new funds. Many are. I mean, there's many successful funds that have been very successful at raising new rounds of capital, but others have not. And they're usually the ones that are sitting on large portfolio of investments that haven't exited yet, and they and their LPs are saying, well, we need to see that money come back in the form of some successful exits before we bring new money in. Angel investors is a bit of a different story, since it's individuals that are putting in their own personal capital, with smaller dollar amounts, but collectively, you know, anywhere from a couple $100,000 all the way up to as much as I've seen $1 million or $2 million from different angel groups. Some of them have been hit pretty hard, just because they've had real estate investments, they've had stock market volatility. Again, there are many that we know of that have continued to achieve great success and see great returns, and they're using the opportunity from a few groups tightening their purse strings, so to speak, to aggressively do more deals. And so I liken it a bit to the real estate market. If you have money, now's a great time to buy, if you've got a long-term perspective. And there's many angel groups that subscribe to that, and they're picking up some really interesting deals and getting involved in financing some really interesting companies with less competition, potentially better valuations for them, so getting a little bit more equity for their dollar invested. And so there's still a lot of good news out there, and we see it. We've seen it getting better, and we think it's going to continue to get better in the future.
Well, Alex, with that tightening of the purse strings, as you say, do you see any significant foreign movements as it relates to investment, either U.S. investors taking their money abroad or foreign investments coming into the U.S.?
We've seen both. I don't think it's been significant. There's definitely some new laws and things that are making it easier for foreign investment to come in to the U.S. and so forth. We haven't seen a ton go out of the U.S. because there's still, like I said, there's still an enormously successful startup industry in America. The quality of the companies and the quality of the entrepreneurs, just because we're in a recession, or we're in one perhaps, doesn't mean that quality goes down. Those people are still there, and their ideas are still great, and they're still building interesting, exciting businesses. So that hasn't changed. So I don't think it's been significant in that regard. I think where most people see and hear about and read about that stuff is some of the larger groups that are investing in big international funds that are betting on currencies and betting on market economies in different countries and so forth. But we haven't heard much about angel investing, venture capital investing, and bank investing, going up at the expense of, American investment or vice versa. I think it's been fairly moderated.
And Alex, just to give the listeners a sense of geography, you're based up in New York, and what perhaps give us an example of what you would describe as where your customer base is coming from. Is it purely the New York market, or is it broader than that?
Actually, we're based in Salt Lake City, Utah. We have offices, though, in Portland, Denver, Seattle, Phoenix, Baltimore, and we're expanding into Minneapolis, Miami, and a few other markets. We do have some events that we're working on in New York and other East Coast places. So just to give you an example, last month, the month of April, we had just under 10,000 businesses come through our virtual and physical doors. So it was like 9,700 and some odd. And they were literally from every single state in the U.S. That's the case every month. Every month we have companies from every single state, from Hawaii to Florida, from Maine to California, and everything in between. And so we see, and we see every type of business you can imagine, from ideas to 10-year-old manufacturing companies, from internet-based businesses to, you know, pizza restaurants, and so we do have a pretty unique snapshot and vision into the overall business economy, just because of the quantity of groups that we're working with, both in sheer numbers and the fact that we see every state and every business industry. So the combination of the two gives us a pretty good look into what's going on.
Sure. Well, Alex, clearly you have been involved in significant capital and fundraising transactions. For the listeners today, please describe the process as it is, and perhaps if there are any changes that have taken place recently.
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to, first of all, you know, what kind of financing are you going to seek? And a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs don't know. And that's where our real value add, and that's why our business has been successful, is in helping them figure that out. And then after you figure that out, you know, what do you need to do to put yourself in the very best position with that potential funding source? And so there's a lot of things that you can do to prepare. I'll start with debt financing, bank-related. It really comes down to a couple of key factors. One, the business, to get a sizable loan, I'm talking, you know, over $50,000. If it's under $50,000, the criteria is not as strict. But if it's over $50,000 or maybe even over $100,000, the business is probably going to need to have been around for at least 2 years. It's going to have a couple $100,000 a year in revenue. It's going to need to show some profit, and the owners of the business are going to have credit scores, around 680, 700 or above, because they will tie owners' personal credit to a business loan. So that's a very basic criteria for a lot of our banks, over 450 that we work with around the country, to get various types of financing, like I said, whether it be factoring or equipment leasing or just an operating line of credit, or an SBA loan, or, you know, all of the above. So those kinds of things are important. Pertaining to your topic, you know, a CFO solution that has done an impeccable job of preparing both historical, current, and projected financials are incredibly important, in fact, crucial to both processes, to both banks and investors. So that's a quick snapshot there. With regard to going to investor financing, you have to have really, really strong projections. Historical is important, but not as much so as it would be to a bank. But you have to really nail what's happening in the future with your business. And again, a CFO solution there, an outsourced group or an in-house CFO, absolutely critical. It's a must to make sure that that's done right. And not only that's done right, but that the presenters, whether it be the company founders or the CEO or some combination of that, that they know those numbers inside and out, and not just have the numbers memorized, but can very clearly speak to them how you came to those conclusions, where those numbers came from, why you believe that you can achieve them, why you believe that they are true, and so forth. So that's stuff that we help with, or we have had internal help with, or even outsourced to external groups. But both types of financing absolutely require your ducks to be in a row there, because that's a very big red flag if some of that stuff doesn't add up, doesn't match up, or you can't speak well to how you came to it. That'll in many cases kill a deal with a bank or an investor if you can't cross all your T's and speak to why you dotted all of your I's in that in those financials.
Sure. And in that regard, what would be the typical time frame? Let's say somebody came to you for a couple of $100,000 of loan versus maybe a million or five of equity raise, or maybe more than that, 10 million. How long would it take in those instances to go through that process?
You know, there really isn't an average time, because since keeping in mind the quantity of businesses that we work with, there is all different time frames. It really depends on how much work needs to be done on their path to financing. Are we doing a lot of work? Are we doing a little bit? Are they an experienced team? Are they inexperienced? Is it an existing business? Is it a going concern? Do they have good financials or bad ones? Do they have, you know, all the different boxes that we check off? So, and then, of course, the dollar amount. The more money you need, the longer it takes. And so if all their information is properly done, everything checks out, and they're looking for a low dollar amount, you know, it can be fairly quick. But if they, which is the case with most businesses, if they have some work that needs to be done and there's other issues that need to be fixed and worked on, then and their dollar amount is higher, it can take much longer. So, but there's really not a, I wish I could tell you that there was, you know, it takes X amount of days, but it's just, there's just too many variables.
Would quick potentially be 3 months, a year?
Sure. Yeah, that's, yeah, for that first scenario I described, definitely. I mean, it could be much shorter than that if everything's clean and the dollar amount's lower and so forth. But it could be, you know, 6 months to a year if it's a high dollar amount and it's an equity raise. And I mean, there's a number of variables that could increase that. But certainly it could be that or less if everything was in order and the dollar amount was a reasonable request.
Sure. And you mentioned a little bit in terms of the element of what that CFO needs to be able to provide to you, or that interim CFO, whoever is assisting with the capital raise. The management reporting and that internal documentation, how can a CFO better prepare for the challenge of that due diligence?
Well, one of the best things that I think, it depends on the experience of the CFO. If they've been through fundraising before, then they'll certainly be able to call on that experience. But one of the things that we recommend, other than working with us, obviously I'm biased, but is if that's not an option for you of interest, there's a lot of peer help that is available out there as well, in terms of likely CFOs, know other CFOs that have been through money raising experiences, whether it be debt or equity. And there's a lot of best practices that are available there. There's some information on the internet, although you have to use a filter there to be careful, because it's difficult to tell what's good and worthwhile and what can potentially send you down the wrong path. So it's really ideal that you hire and work with someone that has a lot of experience doing that, because it is difficult. It's very difficult. Be a CPA or CFO and not having raised money before, the best thing they can do is just to have impeccable financials, both historical and projected, and they can certainly be good at that. But there's a certain amount of art and less science to the projection side, in terms of how did you come to these numbers. And that's where some outside help can really make a difference, because if your projections are random or too aggressive or aren't backed up by good data or good rational thinking as to how you came to them, it can, like I said, it can be a non-starter. It can kill a deal.
Right, so that can derail important. The whole process.
Mm. It does, yeah, all the time.
Mm. Well, that being said, the role of the CFO often involves one of helping growth of a business through acquisition as well as organic growth. You talked about sales and making that capital raise or cash raise through that sale process. Although the crisis recently has been one of economic forces, you've been involved in a lot of acquisition situations. Are there any specific lessons that you've learned for the company that's going through that?
Yeah, I think operate your business in a way that it's always ready for due diligence. So operate your business so that all of your financials are always correct, all of your legal documents are always in order, all of your the checklist items for due diligence are consistently ready, so that if the reason being is if they're not, somebody comes a-knocking or you go out for sale, it's going to be a tremendous amount of work to gather all that, and it can slow the process. It can also be a yellow flag to, you know, you didn't have all this stuff ready. So I think good advice is to operate your business always as if somebody were going to come kick the tires on it to buy it. If you do that, there's two things that happen. One, your business will be run better. It'll be run more efficiently. It'll be more profitable, and you'll have better reports and tools to understand what's going on. And two, if you ever do decide to sell or somebody approaches you, you'll be ready to go.
Well, that being said, Alex, we have a tradition on the radio show to ask your CFO tip of the month. What is yours?
Yeah, I think the CFO plays a critical role in helping a company get financed. And so the best advice that I can give right now is some of the stuff I've already mentioned, but I'll wrap it up into three things. One we just touched on, and that's to make sure that your financials and all of your related documents, balance sheet, P&L, so forth, cash flow statements, that are always up to date and that they're very, very accurate. And that sounds kind of simple, but a lot of businesses let that stuff kind of lag. And you can't. You've got to stay on top of it and keep it consistently ready. In addition, if you are going to go out and raise capital, don't be afraid to look for help, whether it be paid help or friendly peer help. But speak to those that have successfully done it or helped others do it, because there are a lot of nuances to getting debt capital or raising equity financing that you don't learn by going to school or reading a book or an internet article. They're learned by doing, and unfortunately, you don't want to learn by trial and error. You want to learn from somebody else that has, and so I would definitely invest in that. And the third thing is entrepreneurs have a terrible habit of saying these projections are conservative. Almost everyone says that, and so if that's really the case, I would challenge entrepreneurs, business owners, and their CFOs to do all of the work that they've done, and then cut when they get to their final number, cut their revenue by 30% and see what it looks like. Cut other corresponding expenses by the correct ratio as well, but see how conservative you can really be, and if the business can still stand on two legs, because that's what investors do. Banks don't necessarily loan money based on the future and blue sky, so that's not as important to them. They'll look at projections and want to understand them. But investors, they're going to do that anyway. They're going to take whatever you say and they're going to discount by some amount. So don't get caught in the trap of saying these are so conservative, because if that's really the case, then you should have cut the numbers further. So those three things combined, I think, can help a company secure debt and equity financing more efficiently and have a higher success rate.
Well, those are great tips. And we would like to wrap up by saying thank you very much to Alex Lawrence from the Funding Universe, our guest today. Thank you, Alex, for sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO in fundraising. We would also like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to small growing businesses as well as the Fortune 1000. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thanks also to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized businesses. Go to www.sap.com. This and other thought leadership about today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. Thank you for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.